Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Chris. This is Parviz.
Hi, Parviz.
Hi.
We'll give everybody a few minutes. Parviz, you'll be up first today.
That's good. How much time do I have? Half an hour?
I'm penciling in an hour. If you need more, we can go a bit further. Most of the other stuff is prep work for some of the other activities we need to do.
Okay. All right. So that's good news. Okay.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Chris. I was I had total silence. I was just wondering whether my audio was working.
Yeah, I was on mute while we were waiting for people to join. We'll get started in just a couple of minutes.
Very good. Hey, listen, one follow up from the last meeting was I had suggested that we have some type of wiki page where we can collect some of the principles for the microservice architecture that people could comment on, at least a place to capture the results of the discussions and so on. So similar to what was done with S3 VP.
Yeah, great. I actually set something up. It's not really populated, but it's a place for people to start working. And we'll talk through that after Parviz's R2 proposal.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. That was all I was expecting, actually. I wasn't expecting to populate it, but at least provide the infrastructure for it to
sure.
progress.
Okay. Hey, Stefan, you sound like a robot. Your voice is kind of alienated.
Is that good or bad?
No, you have a warm voice, but this time it's just like a robot.
I'm going to try and get off the Wi-Fi and go onto a cable then, but that will probably make me drop out for a second. Right.
I see.
We'll give everybody just a couple of minutes for the some of the other meetings might be running a little over. We'll give everybody about 2 more minutes and then we'll get started today.
Is this better?
A little bit, yes.
I'm in a small room, maybe it has echo.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. It's just the room echo.
That we'll have to live with.
Yeah. Okay, so it's 3 minutes after. Let's get started. On today's call, the main topic is going to be Parviz's discussion about R2, which is an iteration of several of the proposals we've heard up to this point. And then following that, I want to provide an update on the white paper and architecture slides that we're using for R1, and then talk about S3P and about microservices and the path forward on each of those. Parviz, I'd like to turn it over to you now.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, let me share my screen here. This is not okay. You can see my screen, yeah?
Yes, perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Let me put it on the display mode. Okay, thanks, Chris. So what we are doing now is to basically look into some of the slides that we have put together with help from Vimal on the team, and also Jamil from Orange. The focus of the today's presentation is to establish a baseline, at least for it's a proposal for release 2 and beyond architecture, the ONAP release 2 and beyond, the end-to-end architecture. So the high-level view of the architecture, Chris, from a TSC perspective, is shown here. You already reported at some point that in your ARC weekly call that architecture at a high level has been already approved by TSC. And there are two main areas of inconsistency that we want to address as part of the architecture proposal that at least we have one proposal today. The very first area of inconsistency is the orchestration architecture. That is where that the orchestration layer and the control layer, from an architecture perspective, it was agreed that it should be separate. And then more specifically, in the target architecture for ONAP release 2 and 2 plus, we need to bring the differences between the APC and VFC architecture component into a nice alignment at when we are done with the target architecture. Now, of course, today we are not going to worry about how the projects, the ONAP projects, are mapped into this end-to-end proposed architecture framework. But we are going to, of course, rely on the individual projects later on to drill down into the detail and address some of the detailed technical mapping of their own project and the component of the project that would be mapped into the R2 architecture for ONAP. This is Chris. I have seen from your presentation that you clearly stated that the TSC has already approved the release one architecture, and this is basically showing all the major building blocks for the R1 ONAP architecture. So I don't need to really spend a lot of the technical details to talk about the components. As you can see, there is, of course, the notion of the separate component for VFC and APC, then the multi-VIM and the multi-cloud functional block is shown there, the SDNC and the DCAE and the rest. Of course, there are two parts. There on the left, you see the design time aspects of the architecture, and on the right hand side you see the runtime and all the components, at least at a very high level for release one architecture, is shown here. In the bottom you see the external components, which include all the multi-cloud component and some other external vendor component that would be basically integrated within the architecture, which has been integrated for release one. If there is no question, I can move on to the actual proposal. So the proposal here is basically to look into the release one architecture and try to see if we can provide some details, some of the layering aspects of the release two architecture that would make sense based on the discussion we had so far. And of course, this discussion here is collection of the idea that we have been working together with the AT&T team, Vimal, Dean, Paul, and others. And also Jamil has already provided some input to see if we can bring this proposal at least to a point that to get the attention from the community. And hopefully, if you're successful, we can have a rough consensus at least on some of the principle of this release to architecture. On the high side of this, you can see that there is a link already on wiki page. And this is where Chris, you and team, you have already captured and documented some of the from the architecture team, some of the principle for the ONAP architecture, and that link is shown on this page. So the clearly the release to architecture for ONAP has to be a layered architecture. It would recognize that the orchestration layer, the multi-cloud layer, and the controller, the various controller that they basically form the overall architecture for ONAP platform. The functional rule of each layer should be managed and should be designed and defined in a manner that the overlap from a functional perspective is minimized or avoided altogether. Okay.
We're talking about logical architecture, right? Not actual realization.
Yeah, this is a functional architecture that the not the network implementable architecture, the logical building blocks. And then at some point, we can talk about the actual implementation and which flavor of the architecture would be applicable to which use case scenario. Okay?
Just to clarify, today's proposal is about the function of the logical architecture and not the project view, correct?
Yes. There is no mapping of project, individual products, project to this architecture. That is for a future discussion, future call. So the idea of using the design studio that is already basically defined in ONAP, we could keep and continue to use that concept. And we want to make sure that the management model, whether it's TaskUp or whether it's a nested like a complex VNF or simple VNF or a set of those VNFs that form a network end-to-end service with combination with the policy and analytic design tools, those are all captured in the overall end-to-end architecture.
Are you saying that's a separate architectural layer, or I'm trying to understand the relationship of this requirement?
Yeah, you can see when I show the picture, the different layering aspects of the architecture come to life. If you be a little bit more patient, Alex,
okay.
And if you have any questions, please bring it up. Okay, so the ONAP should support a cloud agnostic model. The modeling aspects of the architecture is the key. Of course, this has to go hand to hand with the multi-cloud adaptation layer, and also while they are hiding the infrastructure details. So that work is already happening, and we are of course continue working with the multi-cloud, multi-VM team to bring update to complete this architecture in future calls. So the goal for ONAP at this point is to make this architecture modular, model-driven, and of course the microservices-based. And this is where that the architecture should really deliver. It has to be modular, model-driven, and based on microservices concept. And then the model-driven aspects of this has to really incorporate and the components that they can form like the layers of architecture that we're going to talk about. The ONAP should, of course, define, I guess that this is already agreed by the team, by the community, that the northbound API should be common, should be well-defined, and should not be under-specified at all. So this would include the functionality of the controller layers as well as the orchestration layer. So the architecture, the capability should be flexible. It shouldn't really promote any vendor lock-in. It should really strive to use the common building block where that different variation of the architecture based on the flavor of the implementation that is highly desired by operators and vendors. The architecture should allow those flavors or variants of the architecture to be implemented without any restriction or vendor lock-in. So the other thing is the unified API and modeling tools for at least for the integration across all the modules. An example is that VES is currently using DCAE. As you can see in the next page, there are other functions of this so-called common services. So this is a very simplified view of the R2 architecture. When I say simplified, we are just simply showing the boxes. We are not worrying about the details. So at the very top, you have the ONAP operation manager, which you already saw up in the release one architecture diagram. So I'm just replicating that here. Then when it comes to, on the left, the design time, we added the contributors, Vimal, the AT&T team, myself, Jamila, and others. We added those functions that are already available for ONAP, the resource onboarding, all of it, the service catalog, the analytic application design, and so on. So on the vertical blue boxes on the left, initially it was the VNF SDK, and now to allow this architecture to also entertain the connectivity with the physical nodes, we are also extending that concept into the PNF. We call it the VNF PNF SDK. And then at the same time, of course, we are going to engage the other aspects of the architecture for testing and certification. Of course, there are projects in release one, and we follow on when we get to a point that we map a project for release two project on top of this architecture. You can see the different the detail of the implication of those projects on this architecture and the mapping. So on the lower part of the design time, you see the interaction between the SDC, the design time, and the runtime components. In the release one architecture, that is shown as a functional block for clamp. That is not really the intention here. For release two architecture, without bringing the different projects mapping into this overall architecture diagram, we are just simply saying that the interaction would be the service recipe, engineering rule, policy distribution, so and so. And that interaction has to take place between the SDC, the design time, and the rest of the architecture for runtime interactions. And you see that fat arrow showing that interaction. Is it orange or pink? On the main body of the architecture on the right, there's nothing new here. We have seen this in release one, the policy framework, DCAE, for inventory orchestration. Now, the key point for this architecture is the orchestration function. As you can see, we are not really prescribing any specific orchestration kind of detailed functionality here. The architecture is based on a hierarchy of the orchestration layer. Those three dots you can see, those are the signifies the fact that this architecture is going to entertain any implementation of the orchestration function that can be tailored to a specific use case. For example, if you have today the service orchestration, the SO layer, below the SO layer, if you want to really implement the VFC NFPO sublayer, that could be also mapped into this framework. So you can have a SO, and then below that as a way of like showing this recursively, you can have NFPO for your VFC implementation. And you can also get into a more fine detail of orchestration in a smaller footprint, like at the city level or at the state or province level, and then the nationwide. Those variations in implementation for the orchestration layer should be supported by this architecture. So we talk about the detail in the next few slides. Okay, so that's very key to this proposal, to allow the orchestration hierarchy, and then to tailor that orchestration hierarchy into the specific needs of operators' deployment scenario. if they want to really have this multi-layer of hierarchy for orchestration function. So in the middle, there's nothing new, the common services. So we have the normal, the DMAP, CCSDK, all the way to operational optimization framework, authentication and authorization function. Below that, this is again another specific aspects of this proposal. We are showing you on the lower right a bigger, like a gray box. On the upper left, you have AppC, and then you have the VNF manager. Let me explain and be very specific here. The idea for ONAP eventually is to use a common unified set of function for controller. It's called the generic VNF controller functionality. So the focus of that, of course, is on layer 4 to layer 7. But here is the tricky part. For AppC, of course, you would specifically talk about lifecycle management, which is already handled by AppC. But if you really look at the release one architecture, the VNF manager, collectively with NFVO, collectively they form the overall functionality of the VFC. So in this architecture, we intentionally split that into two pieces. One piece showed up in the generic VNF controller, is called VNF manager. This is the generic VNF manager, which is part of the VFC functionality today. But the NFVO layer of the VFC is moved up, and it would be subsumed by the orchestration layer. So you see the orchestration function, that can be any combination of the service orchestration, the SO, plus the NFVO implementation, and even more. So again, this proposal, this proposed architecture is quite, it's designed in a manner that to be very flexible, so it can accommodate different needs of the operators in a larger scale, mid-scale, or small-scale deployment of this architecture. So splitting the VNFM, which is a generic VNFM and NFVO, into this architecture is intentionally to allow the ONAP R2 architecture to entertain a kind of a unified set of functions that eventually could be merged into one hopefully functional block. In the meantime, between now and a future release, that future release could be R N and greater than or equal to, maybe greater than 2. And if the community, they decide to implement those functions using the same code, so be it. That's, but the architecture should allow the operators to really stick to whatever they have today. There is no intention for this architecture to force any specific implementation or to disallow any specific implementation. So that is the beauty of the underlying assumption for developing and designing this architecture.
Can you elaborate on this a little bit more? I don't get how that would work.
Okay. So look at the release one architecture today. You have two flavors of controller, so-called the VFC, of course, for certain VNF functions that is not necessarily share the same code and implementation with the AppC. So in R1, it's perfectly fine. And in the existing code, you would see that the VFC is implemented. And then at the same time, you have the AppC implementation, uh-huh. And they coexist. Yeah, and they coexist in a very nice manner. But in release 2, what we are saying here, that we just look at the layered internal structure of the VFC. VFC, the way that is defined at the orchestration layer, it has the NFVO layer, and then you have the VNF management layer. The VNF management comes in two flavors. One is called generic VNFM, the VNF manager, and the second one is the vendor-specific VNF management layer. So the generic VNF management layer is shown as here as a VNFM in the bigger box, but a VNF manager specific to vendor implementation is shown in the red box in the area that is labeled in the external system. We are doing this to capture accurately the role of each function, whether it's in a blue, in a gray box, or in a red box. In the gray box, the VNFM is a generic VNFM, which is currently supported by VNFC implementation. But however, the VFC implementation here is a split between the VNFM for general VNF manager and the NFVO, and the NFVO layer is captured by the orchestration layer. For the red box, which is the vendor specific, that is not necessarily interacting directly with generic VNF controller. The way that we position that red box here as S, which is a vendor specific VNFM, it can directly interact with the NFVO orchestration layer. So you cannot really get confused with the fact that the SVNFM is not going to directly interact with the generic VNFM or even with the APC. The SVNFM, the red box, can directly interact with the NFVO orchestration layer that this architecture allows, that hierarchy, which is already shown in the blue box. It's called orchestration function. And then at the same time, you also have the EMS function. So the same by the same token, the EMS for vendor-specific implementation can also interact with the NFVO layer, orchestration layer, which is again, that interaction is between the big blue box called orchestration function, which the specific implementation of orchestration function would be like an NFVO interacting with the EMS, which is that red box shown in the external system part of this architecture. And then of course, as part of that interaction, today in release one, we have the interaction between the STNC, which is your layer zero to layer three STN controller function, which today we have the vendors, a third-party controller that includes like the DC controller, the gateway controller, and also the WAN controller. They are all present when it comes to implementing the third-party controller for realizing, for example, in release one, for realizing your voice over LTE, the VoLTE use case, those components are all present in release one. Continuing to release two, we are not going to disallow that hierarchy between the STNC as a global controller, and of course the downstream controller in this case would be a third-party controller, whether that's a DC controller, whether it's like a DC gateway controller or a WAN STN WAN controller, and that could be even generalized for R2 to accommodate even more use cases going forward. Okay, let me finish this and then I'll ask for any question or clarification. The layer below the external system is labeled as managed environment. The reason we are saying the managed environment, in reality of the implementation of the ONAP architecture, today you can bring the component like virtual router or virtual switch, we call it the network function layers. That could be like an OVS or virtual router. It could be a physical box like PNF, is labeled already, PNFs and VNFs, of course. And then below that, we are showing the OS layer, the hypervisor, and other variation of the infrastructure implementation. And that is where that multi-VM, multi-cloud aspects of the architecture come into play. Of course, we are showing different cloud provider, the plain case using the OpenStack and then the VMware, Wind River, and others. Okay, and they are all a part of that infrastructure layer, which we already draw a line, a dashed line. Below the dashed line, we are showing that as a managed environment. Above that line, we are showing the red boxes as an external system. So the vendors, they can bring their own controller and with the associated southbound API that can manage their own assets. Whether routing, switching, or any other VNF or PNF. But this architecture allows any combination of those deployment scenario that I mentioned. Now, any questions?
A question on STNC and multi-cloud, right? I mean, we have all agreed that within a data center, STNC shall configure the control ecosystem through multi-cloud, right? Sort of, if you look at this picture, that's not well reflected. Of course, I agree that VAN case SDNC would directly manage, the VAN components, but sort of maybe there is a good way of capturing both, like, you know, using, going through multi-cloud within a data center and also outside VAN.
Hold on. Ranki, let me get back to this question. You're right. The SDNC today in release one, there's background noise. Okay. Thank you. So SDNC, Ranki, you're right. That is the global controller today. We all know. There's nothing to hide there. And then there are downstream controllers in a very hierarchical manner. It would basically support the lower layer of the controller. Today, even in R1, as you said, of course, we have the third-party controller, even in multi-use case. We have multi-vendor. They are inserting their controller in coordination with SDNC. So that creates the connectivity services from an end-to-end perspective. But for multi-cloud, you're right. For multi-cloud, you can enable certain function of that layer to manage and orchestrate all the assets within a specific infrastructure. So if this picture is not directly showing that in action, maybe we can probably add another dimension.
It's not. I think this picture is not model driven. I think. If you were model driven, you would not be showing a lot of the same components we had in R1. And then what Ramke was saying would actually be accurately reflected, because what he's basically saying is there's a representation of a service or a piece of software or VNF or whatever that needs to be deployed. It is modeled in a certain way, and that's the set of resources that you will have to instantiate and install and configure, right, and stitch together. And how we do that may or may not follow the existing boundaries of what we call SDNC versus multi-cloud versus something else. You know, there's
Okay, Alex. Alex, you're saying that this picture doesn't really show the true nature of a model-driven architecture. Okay, you could be right. If there is a more clever way of really redrawing this picture to really bring the intention of the architecture, which is based on a model-driven kind of concept, so be it. We can, if you want to redraw this, to create a new picture, I'll be happy to work with you, the AT&T team, the Orange team, and the contributors, to work with you to redraw this picture. But the intention is not lost, okay? The pictorial representation could be not optimal, but the intention is there. We work with you offline to make sure that this picture is completely aligned with the intention that this architecture should be model-driven, okay?
One of the issues here is kind of short-term versus long-term. Short-term in the year two timeframe, we're going to have a lot of the same projects that we had in R1. Your point is taken about we want to get to model driven, so we want to be making progress within each of the components in that direction.
Okay.
I like the idea of having multiple orchestration functions and alternative ways of doing that, but are we really saying that? Are we saying that we will have a set of interfaces defined with alternative implementations of those?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That is one of the key. Yeah.
And so is there,
Steve wants to go. Let's Steve in.
I have a couple of things. I think on the orchestration, the let's say the functionality provided by orchestration will be dependent on the models you're ingesting into it, right?
Yes.
And then, of course, I think you may need to distribute those and have communication between them, and we need to draw that up. One thing there, I think it's very tricky to get all views into one architecture. I think we need one baseline view. And then what I think we need to do is maybe a couple of supporting slides that draw up a couple of aspects of it, like the relationship between ISTE and C, the controllers and so on there, and just focus on that in one picture and maybe the relation between the models and the orchestration. So we need to maybe have a couple, one baseline view and then a couple of sort of extracts where we sort of expand a little bit onto that. Javi, you said one thing, I had my introduction, you said one thing that I didn't quite get. You said the orchestration function was going to interact directly with the SVNFM. Why wouldn't that go through the controller? Because then the orchestration just knows he's speaking to the VNFM if he has to, and that VNFM is speaking to the SVNFM if he has to.
Keep in mind, Stephen, on the orchestration vertical stack, is completely at least defined in certain specification in industry. For example, if you if a vendor specific VNFM in the red box, I would basically tightly interact with the NFPO, which is already an instance, not an instance, in a recursive manner. You have the NFPO and the SO captured in the hierarchy of the orchestration, construct.
But that interface towards that is standardized. That is correct. And then that interface is the same as interface in principle towards the VNFM that could come out, and you could have the SVSM come in into that. So I think I'm totally with you in allowing the same capabilities we have with R1. I'm not trying to change any of that. I'm just sort of trying to make it a little bit cleaner in the layers.
But I actually have a question. I want to challenge that a little bit, Stephen. So do we really need to hold on to the traditional layering given the use cases for deployment and how this needs to be operated and what the 5G world might bring to the table? It seems to me that, you know, this three-layer, four-layer kind of way of doing it, or this denomination between controllers and orchestrators. If you want to go cloud native, let me put it this way, maybe the structure needs to be different.
I think we've been talking a bit about microservices, and that's something we want to work on. I'm not sure if we're ready in R2 to do it, so there may be some give and take between the pure cloud native and pure microservices approach.
Let's be very intentional and not say we're going to be cloud native, right? On the first page, we've set all sorts of cool, lofty goals, right? Model driven, microservice based, all that. If we're not going to be microservice based in a true sense, if we're not going to be cloud native in a true sense, microservices is a how. But if you're not going to be cloud native, let's not kid anybody.
I don't think they're contradictory, Alex. And in my mind, I think we also have to allow for migration from industry state to where we want to go as well. And that's a little bit behind my motivations. But one thing I want to leave this meeting with today is a baseline architecture that we agree to. And then at the moment, we've got several proposals about how to draw this and so on. I want to leave today with saying, hey, this is what we align around. And any further discussion shows changes against that.
Yeah.
This is a architecture view, not a real, this is okay. You can draw blocks, and group them together and say, this is what we have. And this will be right as anything else. But I think you kind of have three views that you need to develop: a functional, an operational, and a deployment. That's how you build. That's how you actually build software, right? From those three perspectives. And if you start looking at deployment, for example, I would love to see a microservice bus as a central piece, because that's what it needs to be.
So
and that will dictate how things are connected. In fact, there is no hierarchy.
Functionally there is, and I appreciate what you're saying when you say from an implementation perspective that hierarchy goes away. But functionally, I think that there is, and what we're trying to say with this, I think, is that the number of layers you might have in orchestration, that just depends on the models you ingest into this thing, and that comes out of that. It's not set by in stone.
But it also means that there's no the behavior of the system is going to be very different, right? right? And so is predictability part of what we're looking for? I guess I'm just trying to understand, right? If the orchestration functions can be pluggable, if you can have subsetting and substitution, so that no single vendor has to deal with the entire stack, or they can add their own components to replace, then predictability is not the principle of least astonishment is not required, right?
Now, Alex, let me inject something. What you're saying is already captured in this deck. There are other slides. What is probably, based on your comment, we need to do is, as Steven says, if there is other pictures that we can add to supplement to this picture to bring the clarity and the technical details. I tried in the next slide to capture some of them, but this is a proposal. This is the best that we could talk the contributors. Most likely the community and the collective wisdom of the community, we can improve this. But that has to be somehow explained in a manner that we can make basically make progress. So offline, I'll be happy to work, Alex, with you to see how we can capture whatever you're saying, keeping the integrity of this proposal, if it technically makes sense, to improve that. Can I move on to the next page to see, Alex, some of the points that you raised? Probably some of them are captured. The next one, it's the same picture.
Parviz, before you move on, if you could go back, I have a question about the pluggable orchestration functions. So I understand there will be well-defined interfaces and those models will be interchangeable. My question is, what exactly is the motivation for that? Because that introduces all kinds of variations for the deployment, all kinds of complexities. Yeah. So what are we gaining by opening that?
I tell you, there is a very... very valid reasoning behind this, from at least to my knowledge, and when I share that with Chris and some other architects, ONAP architects, I guess we resonate on the idea is the deployment variation, deployment scenario. You can imagine a big operator, they want to really deploy this architecture. They are not going to have a single service orchestration layer sitting there and orchestrating all their assets worldwide.
I finally understood what you meant. Just clicked in because.
Okay. So let me add that. Okay. So if the architecture is designed in a manner that you can bring a scale into this, when I say a scale, you have a small footprint. You want to have an orchestrator to manage your asset in that footprint. Then you have a bigger footprint at the city level. Then you have even a much bigger footprint at a state level or province level. And then, of course, you can have a nationwide footprint or even international domain footprint. So we are not going to limit the scope and the functionality of the architecture to disallow any of the implementation that would meet the requirement of any carriers, any customers, okay? It's a broad statement, it's a very blanket statement, but the devil is in details. When we take this architecture at a high level, as Steven says, we can add some specific use cases or some cases that we can expand on the functionality more into the detail of the smaller layer. The hierarchy of this orchestration.
But I could similarly argue then that there are multiple instances of DCAE and potentially the policy framework. I mean, I understand what you're saying about scale. Maybe it's worthwhile keeping things singular. And then we can have a different view that shows scaled deployments.
Yeah, you might be right there, Alex. I think we have a
problem. I also strongly agree with that. So yeah, that is exactly the question I was going to ask Alex. Over to me. Thanks on the DCAE.
I think this is a good functional decomposition at 20,000 feet, but it doesn't. This is not a deployment view. Or the operational view, right? Because we're missing simplicity. We need to show it in a different way.
And I think, with that said, I would rightfully just call it R2 plus ONAP, R2 plus reference architecture or something. Just put it out there. You know, this is exactly what it is.
I think it's actually a little differently than a reference model. I would. It's just you could call it a reference model. I think each one of the components, I agree with Alex, you should be able to have multiple instances and scale, and they should provide somewhat generic function where the definition of an instance isn't the software base, but rather the data and process being made by that particular application. Orchestration could be at multiple levels is what it's performing, but the code base you've deployed is the same code base. You just give it different identities by content and model, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the model is consistent, right? That's what we're saying, and that's what scared me, is that you gave an impression that there would be a multitude of models, which doesn't help anybody, right?
Well, I think there will be different models. It's that there'll be a single operational model, but multiple models for different types of services.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, guys. Thanks. It was Paul, yeah?
Okay. Okay.
You know, the point about the DCAE, yes, of course, the DCAE today, we all know that there's an edge DCAE, there's centralized DCAE, and blah, blah. So that notion, I don't think anyone is going to disagree. So we are here. This is the picture. It's not probably a pretty picture, but we can add more colors to make it likable, yeah?
We don't need colors. I think we...
Why don't we work on that offline, Parviz?
Yeah.
There's some input and a couple of people who volunteered to help, and let's clear it up for next time. But let's focus on your proposal and see if we have consensus around that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a simplified picture at a high level of functional building blocks. Then I tried to add the contributors, Vimal, Paul, myself, Jamil, and others. So this is where we have something to fill in each functional box in this page. The policy framework is left alone. It's the big blue box. It's showing policy framework. But for DCAE, of course, you have those internal, some of the components or functions, data distribution, the collection layer, and so on. So the CD data analytic engine that's currently today, the correlation through Holmes, and those are the components that already exist. Then the DCAE analytics for microservices. So we are showing at least the number of those boxes to signify the fact that that functionality could be actually map into a microservices kind of style architecture. You have the ANI, these are nothing new, the resource service topology, the ESR for external registration for components. Those are the components that exist today. And then the common services, we didn't add anything, it's all those set of functions. Then again, we are going back to the blue box, which is the orchestration function. So we are saying, this is at least so far the contributor of this proposal, we're saying that there is a recursive relationship between whatever layer that you can imagine, service orchestration, NFPO, and more. That recursive relationship is shown in some examples later on, okay? Please be patient. And then we come to the generic VNF controller, layer 4.7. Again, I put that LCM, and then there is a star next to it. The reason I put the star there, or we put the star there, the lifecycle management for certain functions, for example, if you have a bunch of those VNFs that are VFC compatible, the lifecycle management is handled by the NFU, not necessarily by the VNF controller. For APSI, you can remove that star, saying, you know what, APSI, the lifecycle management is handled by that big gray box, okay?
Just a point of clarification again to calibrate. Have we made a decision that we're going to follow the MANO architecture?
Okay.
We talked about this in the past. We talked about not being bound by it, but being influenced by it. So, in other words, we're taking what we find from it, but we found it to be insufficient as a complete framework by itself.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Just want to calibrate myself. I agree, it is outdated, but okay.
Those points are already captured, Alex. As Chris said, those points are clearly captured in the rest of the proposal. So we need to understand the fact that even though we try to unify those functions, set of functions, for example, specifically for APSI and VFC, but in real life, in reality, we have to somehow allow some of those functions to be placed in a different block here. For example, for VFC, the LCM could be integrated within the NFU. I believe that's the debate is today. But for APSI, that lifecycle management would stay there in the gray box. And then there are tools that are already used, available, NetConf, Chef, Ansible. There are like the EMC VNF manager driver that I already mentioned. There are two variations of that. The one that is in the gray box, in the bigger box. And then there is the red box. The red box is for vendor implementation, a specific implementation, as I said earlier. Those interactions is not necessarily through the generic VNF controller. It's not either through the SDNC. That interaction would go to the orchestration layer. Yeah, Alex, you have a point?
Is there any reason why those external components can need to be crafted somehow separately?
There is a reason for that.
I mean, it's microservices, right? Are you suggesting that they're different somehow, or is just a different domain?
No, the interaction, this architecture doesn't show lines, APIs, and interfaces. We are trying to do justice here for people that are reading this, at least for the first time. Those red boxes, they exist today. The architecture should entertain those implementations like SVNFM or EMS in the red box. However, if you really want to deduce the interaction between the red VNFM, which is vendor-specific, and the generic VNF controller, that interaction is not there. That interaction between the red box, SVNFM, goes all the way to the blue box, which is the orchestration function. Behind the orchestration function, you can imagine there is another layer called NFU. So that NFU interacts with the SVNFM according to the today's implementation. So I guess Chris made it clear that the today's implementation, you're not going to obsolete that. This architecture is going to entertain the reality of the existing implementation, the code. At any point in the future, well, I don't know, 3 years from now, if a community decide to obsolete or to basically remove that capability and bring a completely unified view of this architecture, so still that aspect is covered in this architecture. This architecture doesn't really disallow that, okay?
So a question here, Parviz, so if you're calling out SLI, then it becomes a specific API type of implementation, right? So it doesn't capture the model-driven approach we're headed to, right? Correct.
So yeah, you're right. SLI is a pointer. In today's, we know that in release one, that pointer is going to really go and grab the directed graph and bring it into the workflow. We can rename that or we can remove it. that I wanted, I don't want to lose the significance of the SLI today, Ramki.
But it's still model driven. The SLI is still model driven. It's just a different model technology.
Okay. So I don't want to lose it.
I guess we need to one comment. At the 6 o'clock meeting of the modeling team, we talked about creating this consistent view of different elements of that we need to manage, right? And then keep on, you know, and have that view be extensible as it moves through the life cycle. Is that reflected here? Is that something we should be reflecting? Because we're making proclamations about how things would work, but I keep seeing disconnects between
Is that a disconnect, really? Because of course, whatever the modeling work is done, it has to sort of reflect the capabilities, the architecture, and those interfaces that come from described on these boxes there. And that's the link I see.
It's the other way around, right? Model-driven means you build a model, then the architecture follows.
And architecture is a functional allocation that you're describing in a certain way, and this is sort of setting the baseline for that model, right?
I think what we're trying to do is start from two different points. One is on the modeling effort, and one is on the architecture effort, and then move towards each other so that we get to the eventual target.
Chris, I would add in addition to that, common core use cases. So. Mm-hmm. More genericized use case flows that can highlight and illustrate the interactions among the components. And that kind of is what ties the architecture to the information model, model supporting those information exchanges.
That's a good point.
Those information exchanges meet at the integration pattern, at the integration level for the architecture. I'm struggling to understand what integration pattern is being proposed, and let me explain why. I see references to the microservice bus. I see references to an external API. But at the same time, I see external systems sitting between layers and the managed environment. So like the external system are tunneling through the integration. So could you elaborate on what is the proposed integration pattern that is being presented? Because that defines how the architecture itself is going to evolve.
That's actually key.
Yeah, let me see if I can at least make some comments here. The external system is reality of life today, so it's there. You don't want to remove it, okay?
Reality, but you don't want to throw away your architecture and destroy it.
Okay. Now we go back to the architecture. I guess the notion of architecture. From one angle, you come to harmonize this view with the modeling aspects. Before I answer or comment on your question, on the information model versus data model, we still need to really see, Alex, you mentioned the 6 a.m. call today. We need to understand the tooling system that is available at two different layers. One is so-called the information model, and one is the data modeling. Did you mean information modeling aspects or data modeling or both? Which one?
Well, usually information. You obviously need to. There's domain-specific stuff happening as well. But I guess this is an okay view for what it is, right? You know, this is a way of. This is what I would call a kind of big block, big picture view of the world, right? That you can talk to and attract members and do whatever. I think we need to develop three or four more concrete views that we can actually feed developers. Because if you give this to a developer, I wouldn't expect great things, right? You know, I don't think anybody will walk away with a consistent way of rationalizing it in their head.
And I think this is what we need to get to.
So why don't we do this? Why don't we use this as a consensus building tool? See if we have, you know, where we have agreement, where we don't, and if we can get some consensus on high level directions. And then charter a team of people who are interested. And I hear a number of people on this call, and Parviz has been working clearly with a small team to go off and get an implementable view for R2 and then come back on one of the upcoming calls and see if we can get diagrams that are actionable.
Yeah. Okay, I think it's a great idea, Chris.
I think one of the things this diagram was supposed to do was to put a stake in the ground on the major functions, you know, and how they relate to one another. It was not supposed to be an implementation view, which I agree is equally important, but we've had discussions in the past where there seem to be differences of opinion on some of the things that this is trying to lay out. I think it serves that purpose. I'm fully in agreement that we've got to get, you know, closer to an implementation level spec, but I think we need agreement at this level, or else we're going to have problems, you know, when we get to that level.
Alex, let me follow on to Paul's side. Yeah, folks, we are not really. This is where I see the difference between an open source discussion versus open standards. Well, of course, we all know that in open standard, someone mentioned that if you hand in this blueprint to your engineers, they don't know what to do with it. Well, there is not much into this blueprint except that we are showing the building blocks. We are not even showing, the lines that constitute the actual reference architecture with all the reference points and all the realization of those reference points using different protocols. That's stage three. That's API details. So if you are going to use the convention today, like in all other open source architecture discussion, we are going to, as Paul said, we are going to put those building blocks on this map. We'll probably be reshuffle those building blocks to make it even look better. And then we get into one level of deeper detail into interfaces and APIs and relationship and how to map the components of your modeling tools. Even for modeling tools, we have been discussing in the industry, it's not only about the information model, it's about the data model and the combination of information and data model and how you use that, even in R1, to support different implementations, like Yang versus whatever, Tosca and Ethan. So in this picture, I guess Chris already mentioned, this picture is here. We can probably bring the people who are interested, Alex, Steven, and others, to our small team and see what we can do to make this a more convincible model for the community, okay?
Let me
you just mentioned... You can count me in, Parviz. This is Ramki.
Sorry, Ramki. I'll be happy to help. Ramki, just a second. You just a very key concept, which is the concept of a model. I think we should perhaps take an honest look at our discussion and say, well, we're not ready to talk about architecture yet because that implies certain very key concepts. So we're talking about functional decomposition. We're talking about a model of how we want to arrange components. I think we should need to take that step first. For instance, let's partition this. Does the design time component has any bearing on the discussion we're having? Perhaps not. Perhaps we can leave it aside and reduce the noise, focus on the organization of the elements as the first step towards a architecture.
So to me, this is an enterprise architecture view of the world. That's how I look at it. Now we need to take it and then turn it into something that reflects the structure of the software we're building and the approach we're going to use to build that software. This basically says, here are the rooms and the house and, you know, where the windows and the doors are, roughly. Now we've got to take this and turn it into something concrete. And as I said before, you always, if it's model driven, if that's what we want, then form follows function. Develop the rough model kind of outline first, or at least the layers, then organize the functions against those model layers or elements. And then figure out how to integrate it all together, because if I hear pairwise testing one more time, I'm going to barf.
Okay.
I'm going to try pairwise testing. Chris, I think it would be good if we could sort of say if there's any objection to this being a sort of a baseline, and also take a discussion about which other views we might need, and that could be the sort of input to the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Parviz, do you have more to show, or is this everything?
Yeah, let me spend, I don't know, time-wise, can I have another like 10 minutes to go over the rest of the deck?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we have some time today, so go ahead. Let's finish this. I want to see if we can get to a baseline understanding, and then send the team off to, you know, do the next level of detail.
Okay, so that's all about the picture. Sorry if it's not a pretty picture, but we can work on it. Now the next one is more text. The orchestration function is listed here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing echo. Chris, could you have people to mute? Chris?
Yes. If you're right. Talking, please mute.
Yeah, okay. The echo is gone. Thank you. So the on-app orchestration function, this is a list of the major function, the high bullet points, the model-driven orchestration. So the model means a lot, what that really means, information model, the data model, and so on. So what are the tools for that? Interface to the external OSS BSS system, coordinating activity across various on-app controllers, and of course the orchestrators perform following additional function. That this is a part of this proposal, that how we are going to really expand the functionality of orchestration layer to meet the requirement for release 2 and beyond. Okay. So this is like, I want you to spend some time offline, and if you have any comments, please let us know, okay? The setup function orchestrator. This is where I want to give you an example on what is the recursive nature of the orchestration layer. If you really look at this picture, you have service X. You want to bring the service X and implemented in this platform, the on-app platform. But Service X has other components. You see the red arrow going into somewhere else. There is a PNF, there is a network service, the notion of network service. There's also the VNF, individual software or service. Now you have something called resource here. The resource that are allocated to implement the service, but that resource is going into something else is called service Y. So the service Y by itself is not a network service, and is not a PNF, and it's not a VNF. It itself is another service. Okay, you see the structure now. So this recursive nature or nested nature of the service is one example that how this architecture should be delivering those services, especially when it comes to connectivity services from an SDN perspective, or orchestration from the OS RO perspective. The RO, the resource orchestration, and SO, service orchestration, basically that doesn't even stand anymore. It would lose its significance. Everything would be considered as a service orchestration. The notion of splitting the service orchestration into SO and RO doesn't make much sense anymore because of this example. You can clearly see that the service Y in that lower box, service Y is being treated as a resource from perspective of service X. So the notion of resource in release 1 is more generalized now. And when you allow the orchestration layer to follow that recursive nature and hierarchy that I mentioned earlier, now internal component or set of resources that are used to realize service X by itself becomes another service, but it's in a nested or recursive nature. So this is where we are getting into, what's that? Yeah. this is where we are getting into a very generic kind of interpretation of the service orchestration without even worrying about the resource orchestration. Okay?
This is everything as a service pattern, right?
Yes, it's a service pattern in a very recursive manner. You can capture that. Now, my point is the following. The service Y could basically be mapped into a smaller footprint. All the assets that you have in the network, all the compute resources that you have to realize service Y, all together could be organized in a manner that can be a part of a bigger service like service X. So the notion of service orchestration is a more generalized concept here. It doesn't have to be confused with resource orchestration in a sense, because of the comment that I made.
So just a point of clarification on that. Are you implying with this a potentially a domain model where service X might be implemented by one piece of code, let's say at the top level, and then service Y might be delegated down to a regional or even central office footprint if required? Is that the implication here?
Yeah, my implication from my point of view, and Vimal and Paul, you can Vimal is not here. Paul, you can chime in. Is the following: today, when you say information model, you are going to take a service, for example, a service recipe today, and you are going to really characterize that service by creating some construct. The construct today, we have the notion of VNF or PNF, or then we have a notion of the network service, and then we have the notion of the resources. It could be network resources or service-specific resources. Then the model that Alex and Steven and others were advocating earlier, that model is going to clearly take the concept of resource, whether it's resource, PNF, VNF, network service, or whatever, and fit it into a model, a template, okay? So that mapping has to take place. I'll give you an example. If you look at like a network service descriptor, VNF descriptor, the virtual link descriptor, those three nicely fit into a model. It's called it's a combination of the component service and the overall end-to-end service. So that modeling work has to be done. And Chris, those components could be used in creating this hierarchy here.
You're also employing a certain level of simplification in what we do. And Ramke, take us the right way, but in some sense what we're saying is that, look, we can make the whole process business process workflow driven. That may kick off a whole bunch of orchestration functions to build the individual piece parts of things that need to be built along the way. But they can call a pluggable layer of factories or drivers or something to actually build things and connect things and do whatever needs to be done. That is, okay. In some sense, a simplifying assumption of what the architecture ought to look like functionally, right?
Yeah, Alex, simplification.
Another point here would like to add, sort of if you really go back, then take a step back from this. It's really, we're trying to model the object hierarchy, right? So here are the objects and here is how the hierarchy is. And then it's sort of, and you're depicting recursion. Maybe it's worth starting from there and getting here rather than just jumping here is my opinion. That's all, but it's good. So I'll be happy to help on that. That's sort of, we're at the multi-cloud, that's what we're working on, object hierarchies, but I'm thinking we can inject that thought into the overall architecture itself. And then sort of next.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Can we move on? I'm going to skip this one and then bring some of the high points. Again, could you mute, please? Okay. So some of the high points so far is that the higher order services are basically, there is a purpose to it. Ranke, you want to formalize that using the object-oriented modeling tools, which is great. We should really do that. The idea, as I mentioned earlier, even in Manu, in some other specification in the industry, we should not really separate the resource orchestration with service orchestration. We should generalize that, and that's the intention in this proposal. Okay? That's the intention in this proposal, that we generalize the service orchestration. Then, as you can see, we don't want to talk about too much about Manu, but if you really look at the service orchestration, when it exposes the APIs, those APIs should be equally applicable, not only to the simple VNFs or PNFs, it should be also applicable to a more complex VNFs, which is so-called the network services. That is one of the options that are available to define the detail of this. And then lastly, the complexity, when we talk about the complexity, we want to make sure that, Ranke, those object-oriented modeling that you mentioned, you can expand that model in a very modular fashion. So then that you basically overcome the notion of making your model too complex, okay? This we already talked about that. And then there are a couple of slides on AFC versus VFC. We try to capture some of this function that the architecture should allow both set of VNFs that are eventually be plugged into the platform. So in release one, you can bring the different variety of VNFs, whether it's like a VFC VNF versus AFC VNF. So in this architecture, we don't want to disallow that, because we don't know if some of the operators or even vendors, they are going to basically retire their existing whatever assets. They are bringing those assets into ONAP, into the platform. So the architecture should allow integration or validation of those assets, VNF, PNS, or whatever, by using even the R2 architectural platform. So the R2 platform should allow validation of those VNFs as well. We are not going to bring that to a full stop, okay? And then finally, the principle that we are going to use here, as you can see, you can read, of course, there was a mention of the MSP, the microservices, how to bring it into this, how that's going to evolve the interfaces and the API. So there is, of course, the engagement from the controller layer versus the orchestration layer. The orchestration layer, of course, is going to harmonize most of the APIs, but the controller layer, if there are a wide variety of different controllers plugged into the platform, then we are not going to really disallow the specific APIs that are used by certain vendors. I don't know. We don't have to explicitly mention in the design of the architecture, but the architecture should allow those combination of the product and solution that would be realized on this platform. And then finally, okay, go ahead, Alex.
Keep going. You're the the very last.
Yeah, the next step, Chris. I'm trying to to keep my promise for that 10 minutes. So the next step is, okay, now we have already debated some of this points in this proposal. We are going to, of course, work in a bigger team together. And more specifically, the contributors for this proposal, we strongly feel that the team from VFC, AFC, and the Common Services SDK, they should be also a part of evaluating, reviewing the whatever architecture proposal we are bringing in, and get their input. And hopefully, we have a sanity check, the check of reality to make sure the R2 architecture is a sound, technically feasible architecture. And that is a key point to taking the next step. Chris, back to you.
Yeah, okay, so it sounds like there's one more step that we talked about here that's not reflected, which is create the baseline diagrams from this agreement. and get something to the next level of detail where we can be happy. There were a lot of comments here, and I think there's some cleanup that's needed. And then from that point, then that would drive into the project impact, et cetera. Does that sound right for the rest of the community?
Well, I think we still need to agree on the agreement.
Yeah, right.
There's still some little touches here and there we probably want to adjust. But I also want to, I have a concern with some of the next steps. In some sense, if a famous person said, you know, you skate to where the puck will be, not to where it is now. That should be true for what we do here. And a lot of what we're doing is kind of trying to regurgitate or refactor where the puck is. And if we're going to make things future-proof, maybe the thing to do would be to say, look, we know where we are. It may not be perfect, but that's what it is. But if we're going to be future-proof, we should be looking at environments like Blue Mix and Cloud Layer and Azure and Amazon and Google's and things that actually have been known to operate successfully at huge scale across the globe, and then see what kind of architectural patterns we can adapt or adopt, rather, from those environments. And then build something that can work for today, and then see if we can, you know, have a path towards something for the future as well.
Okay. So let's pause here. We need to work on next steps, and I'll bring that up as the next agenda item. Are there any other comments or questions on Parviz's proposal here?
Hey, this is Raghu. My only request is to limit the use of the term service, and this goes back to the recursive slide that he showed. My request is that to use the term service for the construct that is, I'm going to use the term end-to-end, but in the context of a given ONAP instance, if you will, right? The reason I want to do that is, so there is a distinction between a service versus the components of the service that he was mentioning as service Y is a component of service X. And I would love for us to reuse some of the MEF terminology of what a service is, because this is something that the industry has struggled quite a bit. And ONAP, from an architectural perspective, should be responsible for the service that has been sold end-to-end. And I'm using the word end-to-end loosely, of course, but and so anything below that, you know, that is serving the needs of that service, let's not call it a service. Let's call it something else, a service component.
No, I think, disagree. Okay. I think there's an external view of the world, and maybe it's what MEF defines. I think internally it serves us well to look at things in a very recursive way and understand if we can simplify the architecture by treating things consistently the same way up and down the recursion.
Recursion does not prevent, is not prevented. It is just the terminology that I'm trying to make sure we...
Okay.
It is a tricky discussion, because what is a sold service is also a component of another service in some cases as well. So it's very tricky to make the difference.
Not true. No. In the context of a given ONAP instance, we just...
You will have both. No, yeah. You'll have both. I will guarantee you'll have both.
To Raghu's point, let me just turn. To Raghu's point, that's a valid point when you want to differentiate. The service that you sell as an operator is called the end-to-end service, like voice over IP, VoIP, or VoLTE, or whatever, versus the service that we define in the discussion for creating this architecture. The term that we have been using after so much debate in industry in some places is called the network service, which is a combination of some atomic services. Those atomic services is called VNF.
Show me the difference in how you model these things.
But the component services aren't always atomic. If I have if I have an MPLS network that I'm selling to my customer as a service, that's one thing. If I want to offer a voice over IP capability, but I happen to define that service by building it on top of my MPLS capability, granted, the voice over IP service is my end-to-end service in Raghu's term, but I'm using it by reusing an already defined service and building more functionality on top of that. I don't see a conflict if we accept that recursion to Alex's earlier point. I don't see the conflict. We say there are services at some level. I can make other services out of those services if I decide to offer a service that has more functionality built on top of and reusing that lower level service. I don't, where does that cause problems? And why does that cause people problems?
Why don't we do this? Why don't we just capture this as an issue now? We may not solve this on this call, we can bring it back when the sub team comes back and present their views with the baseline, let's say in a couple of weeks.
Chris, also in the information model, we're defining terms too, and we use the term service and service component, but we can review those once we bring the information model forward. But it's a good place to start capturing, you know, concepts and terms as well.
Perfect.
Chris, an action item for me. People who are interested to participate in deep dive architecture, you know, development, Could you have them to send email to you or me or someone that we know whom to invite? Okay.
Why don't we do this? We'll keep the people who are interested open until the end of the week, and let's make a target of coming back in about 2 weeks, if that works for you, Parviz, with the next level diagrams. I want to make sure we get this baseline handled as quickly as possible.
Sure.
And I put up a page on the wiki. Can you give me sharing for a minute?
Oh, sorry. Let me stop.
I want to make sure that we're chartering this correctly. That did not work. Okay, can you see my screen now?
Yeah.
So the diagrams that I heard everybody asking for, first is a long-term target, which is out past R2. And this would be more of the microservices view, Alex, that you've been talking about. Second is the short-term R2 high-level diagram, which is something that we can start handing to the development teams to help drive how all the components click together, and then an implementation view and an operation view. Anything else that we want to capture in the very near term?
Yeah, I would actually like to go back to what I said before as well. There's a functional view, an operational view, and a deployment view. And the deployment view typically drives a lot of the other things as well, because it sort of finds how things are going to be distributed throughout the world, right? And what kind of things we need to worry about functionally. So that is irrespective of, you know, of the enterprise view of the world, which is what we've built now.
And I would also like to add, especially for the short term, we need a high level software architecture view. At least we need to get there. High level, I'm not saying like detailed software architecture.
I agree. We'll get there, because I don't think we can give what we have today to anybody or to any of the developers.
Exactly.
Chris, my suggestion is to, for the purpose of this discussion, that we focus on the runtime view and leave the design time for the discussion later.
Okay.
Chris, I also, I think, heard, and I think it comes into the subsection of the above, that the overall target, the overall picture, I think we take as some type of baseline there, and then we need to show some type of views of that, where you can say, okay, here's the focus on the relationship of the controllers and the orchestration, and maybe I heard also some type of, you know, general flows to show how some of this sits together. I don't mean lots and lots of deep ones for the use cases, but you know, okay, here's how a control loop works, here's how an instantiation works, and you know.
I don't want to scare anybody. Maybe we should just follow the TOGAF layers. Well, that went over well. No, don't write that down. That's too much. I think we'll have plenty to do. I think we need to also get to some very simple integration patterns and have a view of how that gets put together. Because, like I said, pairwise testing like went out of style years ago, right?
Yeah. So let's do this. So for starters, let's get the team by the end of the week. Let's have Parviz lead it based on this proposal today. And then people who are interested, either email Parviz or email me, and I'll put you on the wiki here. Let's try to keep the team to the 7 ± 2 scrum team and see if we can get something at least on this baseline within 2 weeks the call, assuming it works for everybody's schedule, 2 weeks from today.
You can add me to the list.
Okay.
Yeah, I have Alex.
You can count me. You can count me in, Chris. Ramki.
I got a million diagrams.
Okay.
Dave.
Hey, Chris, I'm open to contribute. This is an awful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I'll capture this for now. And if other people are interested, let us know. And we can add additional people. But I think this is a great start. Try that. Also, I wanted to do something similar. A number of people talked last week about microservices, and I did set up a web page. So we just talked about the architecture diagram task force. I'd also like to do something similar with microservices with the people who are interested. I've heard Alex, Habib, Manoj, Ramesh. Let's see.
A little bit my expectations on this, Chris, because I think we had discussed this last time, is there's lots of principles that were sort of coming up and they're stuck in some sort of PowerPoint somewhere, and it'd be really great to sort of just get those out and down and saying, hey, this is the ones we agree on. And then if people feel there's room for improvement, then there's something to actually improve, so to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that there's been work going on kind of offline, you know, pairwise fashion, Alex's favorite term. So let's see if we can pull everybody together and do a little bit better integration of the work. Anyone else who's interested, feel free to put your name on here. And I'd just like to encourage the team to go off and see where there's alignment, see what we can do in the short term, and then see where you know, the view is for the long term, and then come back to the main architecture call when you have a proposal. Does that work?
Sure.
Anyone else who's interested in participating here? Okay. Why don't we start with this? Sorry, was there someone else?
This is Ramki. You can add me to this also.
Okay.
So both.
Okay, will do.
Ramki, we should allocate a meeting room in VMware and...
Yep. Totally for it.
Okay. I'll just save that. There's a place now for contributions. I hope you can sit down together, talk through where the commonality is between your various approaches, and where we should go with ONAP, and then come back here as you have something a little bit more concrete. And then the final thing is S3P, that we need to start diving in on that. I put together a different section for each one of the topics that was covered in Jason's document, except I just penciled in security because, Steve, I know you're handling that with the security team, and usability said use read the docs, so I don't think that there's much that we would have to do with the architecture team. With resiliency, there are three teams that have proposed solutions, and they're going to start talking to us. Two of them are coming next week, OOM and Music, and then Console is the week following. So we'll start talking about that, and as we make some progress on each of these areas, I've got pages to document them. If other people are passionate about any one of these areas and want to go work offline on proposals to come back, that would be much appreciated. I'll pause now if there's anyone that wants to put your name on any of these particular areas.
I had a question, Chris. Sorry, Alex.
Go ahead.
No, I had a question. It's sort of, at some stage I thought the process was we had to go and speak to each of the projects around this. And my question a little bit is, maybe it's not the architecture perspective, but it's the relationships of security. Do we run that together, so to say, and put that under your umbrella, and I support you with that, or do I expect the security team that we go and create a separate channel of discussions, which I think might be a little bit inefficient with the projects?
Yeah, I think what might be best is between the M0 and M1, we have to talk to the projects. I think the developer summit would be a good time. It would probably be best if we coordinate and have one discussion with each project.
Great.
Rather than multiple.
Great.
Stephen, on the security side, are you only concerned with general shape and form of development and being able to do that in a secure way, or do you actually want to look at security of the company, the actual security of the overall platform?
It also this actually basing a little bit on the I don't know how much time we have to take this here, but we're basing a little bit on the CI badging program because that has a lot of practices in it. And then on top of that, we are putting, making sure that we have secure authorization and secure our signaling and so on, just to really emphasize that. That's the short summary.
Okay. At some point, we need to talk about platform trust and tamper-proof behavior.
I include that within it, but maybe you have points that are not collected.
Okay.
So just to pause here, does anyone have a interest in one of these particular areas that you'd like to go off and develop? Proposal or develop the work that Jason and the task force has started to a next level of detail for presentation in the next couple of weeks.
Hey, Chris, can this be staggered a little bit? Because depending on the architectural views and the approaches we want to take in R2, some of this could be taken care of, right? Or the approach might be very different and non-traditional, right? Like, we don't need five nines of availability, right? And in our components, we need sure. redundancy, right?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. As long as we do something quickly and it's something realizable in the Beijing release. As I said, I've got the first couple of sessions scheduled on this. If there's something else that we want to look at and change, let's bring it up in the very near future so that we can act on it.
Chris, just I'm just trying to get to the understanding of what we should do under these sections. Is it so? Let's take stability to put together a few sort of either. I mean, look at what is actually said on the S3P, and put together. I mean, so that takes us sort of there. So it's not to evolve that as such. It's really to say what architectural patterns or so on may make sense to support that we can then use that to discuss with the projects. Is that it?
Exactly. What are the patterns? And then also, what is the minimum level for ONAP? Some of the things on the carrier grade requirements are pretty high level. You know, if we want to set some minimum thresholds for the projects so we can go back and say, in order to clear level one for performance, then you need to at least meet this, or level two is this other number, that we can give some better guidance than do performance and improve from what you have today. Those people, some of them will change the patterns, such as resiliency. We may want to look at some system-wide components, but others may be on a project-by-project basis, and we just need to dive into what makes the most sense.
Okay, and this is to get sort of, I mean, the output of this would be to have some guidance on that. So, for example, we think that stability, we should do this and this and this. We think performance, I'm just making it up, is something for the projects to come back to. There's no real architectural guidance there. We think for resilience, that could be a common platform piece or whatever. I'm just making it up. I mean,
exactly. Yes.
Chris, the only comment I have is in thinking about the statement Alice was making about future-proofing our solution, there's an element here that is not listed, which is portability. The idea that the ONAP can run on different platforms. If there's any interest in discussing that ability, I am open to do some work there.
Okay. Why don't we do this?
Who was speaking?
That's Hi, Alex. It's Adolfo.
Adolfo. Okay.
It's not technically part of S3P at this point, but if it should be, let's pencil it in. And if you want to come back with a proposal on how we should consider that, then Adolfo, go ahead and work on that, and we can come back and revisit or visit when you're ready.
All right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. So as I said, resiliency, we first up, and that will come starting next week. I'm not hearing people who are dying to take any of these at the moment, so we'll work this offline. If anyone is interested in one of these particular areas, let me know, and otherwise I'll be reaching out and asking people for some presentations in the near future.
Hey, Chris.
Yes?
What do we do with the use case subcommittee requirements? How do we work those into these discussions?
Well, they're not this specific area. But as the use case subcommittee requirements are finalized, which should start happening soon, we'll bring them in and consider them as they affect the architecture.
Okay.
We have about 15 minutes left. Are there other items that people want to bring up before we break? Okay, then I would like to take a brief minute and talk about the white paper that we're doing and also show some architecture slides that I've been using for R1. Hold on just a sec.
So Chris, in that white paper, would each of the projects be contributing, or how is that structured? What are you thinking in mind?
Not yet. This is going to be a pretty high level. We're targeting a 5-page paper, 5 to 10. There we go. Let's see, I'll start from here. Background. This is the official marketing value proposition from the marketing committee. Starting from here is the Amsterdam release architecture for R1. And the reason I'm going to start with the slides is because the paper is going to follow this as the outline. So first there's a high level. We talk a bit about design time and then runtime. And then closed loop, and then walk through the various components. So first there's the VNF ecosystem, then the design time environment, orchestration, the control and management layer, multi-cloud, and closed loop. And then the brief discussion on each of the use cases. We have content, Paul and I have been working on this, and we have content for the various sections. We got some comments back from Lisa from Linux Foundation, and we are reorganizing the paper actually along these lines. We'll have a further draft ready soon. From the perspective of the paper, it's going to be very short and just an easy introduction for people who aren't familiar with it. From the perspective of this committee, what I also want to do is go to the next level of detail and reach out to each of the projects. And Steve has brought this up in the past, maybe have one slide per project that says, here's what my project does, you know, here's the upstream dependency, and here's who's dependent on me. Very brief description of the project plus the interfaces, so we can show how all the components fit together, and then tie it in with the outline that's shown so far.
I guess we don't call it projects, though, do we? Do we call it functional ones, or is it projects?
I think we call it projects. In the current view for R1, we're really doing a project level view. For R2 and beyond, it's functional. We've divorced from the projects. I think that's where we'll start. Once this has been rolled out, we probably want to do a second version of the white paper for R2 that talks about the high level functional view, and then probably a project view. And again, continue. Hopefully, a lot of the content from R1 will translate directly into R2, but we may need to make some updates depending on how the architecture evolves.
Okay.
Any questions or comments?
Yeah,
so the individual projects, are you thinking, Chris, they sort of the tech team will provide input, or what do you have in mind? right now for this paper?
What I'm going to do is reach out to each of the PTLs and ask for a brief update from each project. And everybody should have it. It shouldn't be a whole lot of work. It's just putting it on one slide. Steve, I heard you with a question.
Yeah, it was just, I assume what you'll probably do at some stage is come out, you know, to share that with this community for feedback there. Yes. I was just wondering the timeline for that.
Yes, we have to do one more rev. We got sharing it now, unfortunately, wouldn't make a lot of sense because we're doing some major editing in terms of reorganizing. But I think after this rev, it'll be fairly stable, and we can share it with the rest of the team for feedback. It's something that we're trying to get with the release package, so we want to get this finalized within about a month, and then rolled out, you know, officially at the developer conference in December. So look for it in the next couple of weeks as we process the input that we've received so far.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you. If there's nothing else, I'll give one more chance for anyone with any final comments. If not, I'll give you all 10 minutes of your day.
I appreciate it. Okay. We can tell Alex about bi-directional testing, and then he can spend 10 minutes dealing with that.
There we go.
Okay. Oh, no.
Thanks, everybody. This was a good call.
Thank you.
I think we made a lot of progress. And thanks in advance to everybody who agreed to go take this to the next level of detail.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Bye.